Hey everybody, welcome back to Nikki Nights. For anybody who can see, there are people like listening to this, I'm sure, in the car right now. They're like, what is she talking about? Frizz action. I'm talking about my hair, you guys. Oh, it's frizzy. But you know, what can you do? Hi. I hope you're all doing well. It feels like it's been a very long time since I did a podcast, but it hasn't been. It's only been a week. A lot's just happened in the world. As you all know, we're all kind of holding ourselves together right now for the next couple of days. By the time this podcast comes out, though, we will have an outcome with the election. So, I just want to just say, as a newly out member of the LGBT community, I just posted something on my Instagram, and it captures exactly how I feel. Don't tell someone you love them and then vote for someone who will hurt them. So that's all I have to say on the matter. So I'm gonna bring in my guest. I'm super excited to talk to him today. Wow, what a body of work. But also, I can't wait to talk to him about his background in acting and how he got started, because I know it didn't start in acting. It started on the football field over in the UK. We're going to talk to Mark Ashworth right now. Let's bring in Mark.
Hey. Hey, Nikki.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Awesome.
So where am I talking to you from today?
I am up in my office this afternoon in Georgia, in Atlanta.
Nice.
Yeah.
I've only, believe it or not, I've traveled a lot, but I've never spent a lot of time in Georgia. I think I've passed through the airport in Atlanta.
Yeah, this big city for the hub, the airport. But I don't know. Yeah, I guess aside from Coca-Cola, there's not a great deal of things here. Now the industry's here, though, of course, with that kind of thing, there's a lot of that going on. But
I've heard, you know, for anybody who is like tuning in, there has been like a big resurgence, like a big resurgence of work in Atlanta with the entertainment business. I mean, yeah. and it's back now, right? With COVID, everything's starting to pick up.
It is coming back. It is trickling back. I think just like everything else that's kind of happening around this whole pandemic right now, people are kind of tired of it, and people are trying to work around it as best as possible. I would say it is trickling back, and they're trying to come back. It's definitely a world away from what it was, in regard to the weight of it and how fast and furious it was.
Right.
You know, it's only right that it slowed down in respect for the pandemic, you know?
Absolutely. And now, are you back to work? Have you been back to work post-COVID?
I did a little bit of work with a friend of mine I'd worked with on a film years ago. And he'd asked me to jump on board with him on a project. It's kind of like a pitch project, you know, produce the season episode and the pilot, and then try and pitch that. Obviously, he's got the whole season lined up in script, but then use that as proof of concept to go forward and try and get investors on board and have the whole season done. So we shot that during the shutdown of the industry.
Right.
I was able to do that a little bit. I have been fortunate enough to be on set. I was on set last week, and I've got another week coming up here on a show in town called Creepshow.
That's great.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm very, very grateful. It's been so nice to kind of feel like I'm doing something. Since this all happened, I have been working at my friend's restaurant, which I used to do. I used to be a waiter, you know, like most actors. I think you have to find something that can complement the lack of income that you have, and yeah. Waiting table was it for me. And since this started, I jumped back, helped him. We were catering meals for healthcare workers here in town. I think we were doing like 400 meals a day.
Wow.
It was pretty relentless, the pace that we were going. And now everything has come back. I honestly, Nikki, I've been working at the restaurant now more than I have ever worked at the restaurant. And it's tough. And so to have the opportunity to be back on set this last week, it's like, thank you. I'm able to play a little bit, you know, and I've definitely missed that. It's so important to have that.
I'll tell you. So I guess it was last year. I guess it was before the pandemic hit. I want to say December, end of November, December. I found myself in need of a job. Acting, I was auditioning, but things just weren't coming in. So I went to Starbucks and I got a job there. And I worked there for about, I'd say 5 months, 6 months. And then, you know, the pandemic happened and I was still working there. And then I eventually took a leave and started my podcast. But I can't tell you what, just how much I value the business more and these experiences more after being behind that counter. Not that it's a bad place. It's just when you are creative and you have, you know, you've been on set and you've had these experiences, it's extremely tough and very humbling to kind of just, I mean, I had a very strange experience because my coworkers would play Good Morning Baltimore or I Can Hear the Bells, one of the songs from Hairspray, over the loudspeakers, and the customers would look at me and say, am I being pranked? Say no. You know, and so for me, it was just a very strange experience. And now just to know that I'm going back to a film set, my heart has never felt fuller.
Yeah.
Just, wow.
It takes I think, valuable life lessons along the way that you go through to really appreciate what you have when you have it, you know, and it's so important to go through that struggle. I feel like it is. It just creates a fuller version of whoever you are whenever you have that inside you, you know. It's like anything that you want bad enough, you'll do whatever it takes to get there and do it, you know.
Yeah.
And it gives you, I call them stripes. You know, you're working at Starbucks, that's an actor's stripe right there. You know, it may not be acting, it may not have anything to do with acting, but it is what's taking you, do whatever you can to stay in the fight, kind of a thing. And that is a definite stripe. Working to fuel your dreams is something to be proud of.
I think for me, I had to really learn, as corny as it sounds, that it's not about the destination, it's about the journey, you know?
Yeah.
As cheese ball as that sounds, it's true. And your journey, I want to say, I was just, you know, reading up, started in football, huh?
Yeah. Well, kind of. My journey began in England, and football is such a big part of English culture. You know, it has been. We invented the game, for crying out loud. So football's always been a part of me, and that's who I was and am still. Even though I'm not able to play, I'm still pretty religious with my tribal instincts of football. And I'll always be a United fan. And the journey, it took a sharp turn when I stopped playing football, because that was something that I was doing that was giving me fulfillment and I was getting joy from. I was being creative and enjoying my weekends. And then when that got taken away, when I couldn't do it any longer to the extent that I used to, it made me look elsewhere for something. And I found it in acting. A friend of a friend's girlfriend was going to classes, and she told me about them, and I'd never known it was in Atlanta and it could be something you could kind of do yourself. It was always something I had thought people that were actors had to go to school and gone through fine dramatic arts class. And I just never had the financial capabilities to be able to push me forward that way. And so it was always a pipe dream or something I just wasn't aware of. And so, yeah, I got out of football and kind of started putting my money towards that and putting my mind towards something else I could be creative at.
Well, when I was reading about the football, it brought me back to the many stories that I've heard. I have family over in the UK in Edinburgh, and my great-grandfather played professionally. He played football professionally. Yes. I don't know what team, but my mom has the medal, his medal. She wears it around her neck. And then it's funny, my grandfather, that would have been his son-in-law, he actually played semi-professional football here in America, and his cousin was one of the original Chicago Bears. So at Thanksgiving, Mark, when everybody would be talking about Thanksgiving, it was like, you know, you would see like the little birdies chirping around my head. I was like, what is going on? I don't know a lot about the game, but it's an incredible, I played 9 years of softball. And when you're on a team and, you know, it's almost like that unity. There's a goal in mind. You want to win the game. And when you're all going for the same goal, you start to build this bond with these people. It's just a natural thing. And I think that's what happens on set, obviously. You know, going for this, you know, people always ask me, were there any like diva moments on this set of Hairspray with anybody? And I say no, because we all had this end goal in mind. We all just wanted to make this amazing movie and we all wanted to be on set.
That's awesome. I didn't know you were in that. Amy never told me a great deal about you, but that's awesome.
Yeah, no, that was a movie I did like 400 years ago.
But, where did you shoot? Was that shot in New York or?
No, we actually shot that in Toronto, Canada.
Oh, I love Toronto.
I love it too. And
it's amazing.
We lived there for like 8 months and I miss it so much.
I bet you do. The culture is so vibrant, right? And diverse and just, it's like a clean New York almost.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So when I first got to Toronto, two things happened. I had to check out the subway system because I heard it was amazing. Being a New Yorker, I was like, my friends were like, where are you going? I said, I have to see the subways. I went to the subway. It was beautiful. You could literally like sit down and have a picnic on the subway floor. It was gorgeous. So clean. So clean. Yeah. New York, I love my city, but no.
What about the walkways too, the underground little malls that you can walk around the city when it gets really cold? Were you there in the winter?
Yes.
Close to it. You must have been at 8 months.
We saw every season. And awesome. Then we went way up north to a town, I believe it was called Hamilton. And underneath our hotel was a mall. I was filming so much, I had no idea. My mom, as she came late to set one day, I said, where were you? She said, there's a mall under our hotel. I said, oh boy. I knew per diem was going out the window that day.
But I'm going to have to watch Hairspray. I've not seen it now, so I'm going to go back and watch it.
Oh my gosh. Well, thanks. But I was just looking at some of your work and I saw that scene with you and Denzel.
Wow. Yeah.
That was fun. Can you talk about that project?
Sure. Yeah, that was Magnificent Seven. When I booked the role, it was 6 weeks likely to extend to 9. I booked it, and I had one line when I got the script. I had one line in that whole film, and it was funny because I was looking through the script. There were places where the preacher would be, and so I prepped those moments, you know, after I had booked it. But I looked through the script, I called Joy, my agent, and I said, Joy, there's one scene in this. Do you sure they want me down there for 6 weeks? I said, this is amazing. This is a dream come true. And she said, yeah, they want you down there. So I went down there, and you know what it's like on set. You get so many script rewrites as they come in from the days they shot before. They'll be addressing it. to include whatever the actors had done. If they'd done something a little different, they'll change it. So they were coming in every other night, it felt like. They went through Goldenrod, I think, 7 times. Something ridiculous. Three times. Goldenrod, I think, is the 7th draft of a script. And they went through that 3 times. A lot of rewrites. And so it was like, I was there. I ended up being there for 3 months. And this was like 2 weeks from the end of shooting. And we were sitting down at lunch, I remember, with the other guys, the other Rose Creek, people that lived in Rose Creek there, the other actors. And one of the guys, my friend Sean Boyd, said, hey, he says they've gotten rid of this scene and they've gotten rid of that scene. I was like, oh, well, they're normal. And he said, but there's a great scene with you at number one in it. I was like, oh, really? Yeah. Oh, yeah, great. I read that. Yeah, that's meat and potatoes. I read it. And I thought he was joking, so I was just playing along with him. And I went home that night and had a look at the script that they passed out that we were going to be working on the next day, the sides. And sure enough, there was a scene there with me and Denzel upon a porch. And I couldn't believe it. It was amazing. So I had a day or two, I think, to work on that. And yeah, we went out there, just me and him, really. It was amazing. Amazing. That was just, we shot that like in the middle of the night. It took us all the way till sun up. And it was just one of those nights on set that, you know, you can carry with you forever and you'll never forget. And it's like driving home and the sun's coming up. And I just remembered just that feeling of like, wow, did that really just happen? You know, I've just had a scene with one of the greats, and it was magic. It was a magical night, and I couldn't be more happy. As it came out, I was like, man, I hope I made the cut. And then it went from that to, oh, I hope that scene makes the cut. And you know, I couldn't believe I'd be fighting for that in my mind. And then it did make the cut, along with pretty much everything else that I'd prepped, those little ad lib moments that the director allowed us to feel through in the scenes. He knew that that's where the heart was. So he gave us much freedom to kind of feel our way through the moments. And they bunch of my stuff made it on screen, and he was adding stuff as we were shooting. It was just a dream, you know. Those jobs don't come along, and I know they just don't come along. There's people on there that were seasoned, that had been round the block a couple of times, and they were like, this is kind of a one-off, you know. They were just like that with the money. It was just bizarre how much they were just kind of moolah. I remember there was this extra that was on set, and he had this really kind of long and a bit lanky, and he was taken under the wing of my friend Richie Montgomery. He was like the saloon owner, and he took him under because he was a perfect little lurch guy. He was just wandering around, and he took him under his wing, and he brought him in, and he told him to say a line. He gave him a line. Richie said, when you come up, say it. And they didn't keep it, but because they liked it and they liked the idea of him being there with my friend Richie, he, for the last like month, he came from extra town, where there's like 100 extras, to having his own little honey wagon and being paid money, paid off his student loan that summer, you know, because my friend Richie was like, man, just get up there and say this. And he did it. And Richie's a great actor. He's the gift of gab. You know, sometimes you give him an improv yard, he'll go and go and go. But he's brilliant. And he's got a very, very memorable look and sound to him as an actor. And for him to have brought him in and, you know, kind of put him under his wing and said that, he just, you know, we were saying, man, you've made it now, dude. This is it. You know? But the truth of the matter is, after all that goes, it's just like, then it's like back to ground one again.
Wow, back I to, know.
Back to normal again, back to the hustle, you know, which is what it is. But forever with that in our hearts, right?
True. I feel like you have just spoken from my heart, you know, everything that I've wanted to express since Hairspray, like all of these that feeling of when you just do that scene and you rap for the night and they yell, it's a wrap, you know, go home, or you hear just, and then that feeling of being in the van on the way back to the hotel or wherever it is, and you are watching the sun come up, but your heart is literally the most full you've ever felt. It almost feels like it's beating out of your chest just with like pure excitement. I don't know, there's like an electricity in the air. It just feels like no other feeling in the world. I remember so many nights just driving home after filming with John Travolta or anybody, and I would just be like, that didn't happen. There's no way that that happened. But it's funny, can I ask you a question? I had a project fly me in a week and a half early one time, and before I was ready to film, and I thought I was going to lose my mind in the hotel just being there. What was that like for that much time to be there and maybe not be like, were you on set or were you at the hotel preparing? Because when I'm left in a hotel by myself to prepare, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it can get messy upstairs, can't it? It can. That's part of the job too. And same with set management. You've got to know how to handle yourself. That's just an important part of the job too. And I say important part of the job, it's important part of your self-care first and foremost. That is the job. If you've not got that, you've not got the job. I was very fortunate in that I was pretty much there was maybe a couple of days that I wasn't used, but they brought us to set every single day because we were on weekly contracts.
That's amazing. Yeah.
You know, so we were self-drive. They purchased a rental car for us. And I was able to drive. I was one of the lucky ones too. I was brought in from out of town, I guess. They didn't put me up in a hotel there. They put me up in this kind of a weird, it was like a golf community. It was beautiful. I was very fortunate. I had my own living room. I had a half of a kitchen and I had a bedroom in the back with a bathroom, and the front doors in the living room opened up to the golf course.
Wow.
So in the morning it was like just the windows open.
Where was this?
It was we shot in St. Francisville, Louisiana, just about an hour and a half outside of Baton Rouge.
Sure.
And the other guys were like at Motel 8, and I could see that it may not have been Motel 8, but it was kind of one of those. It was in the middle of nowhere. It was the nicest hotel that was in the area, and it was a hotel. You had to walk in, you had to do the pass and do that in the door, you know. And I was very grateful to have the opportunity. My wife was able to come and visit. With my daughter, I missed her first birthday because I was down there shooting that. So she came down Father's Day, which was a week or two after. And she came down three times while I was there, which was great. But it was cool. It was just, you know, they could stay at the place and it not be boring for them to be in the hotel. I was very, very fortunate.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Hotel living, I've been doing it on and off now for 14 years. And it's interesting. I have my own ways, you know, we have our ways in hotels, but you said something really important. Like you were talking about self-care. And I think for me in the beginning of my career, I was so, just let me do everything. I was a big people pleaser and I always put everything first, everybody else first. I put obviously the production, but then I really realized, I want to say the past 5-6 years of my career, no, you have to take care of you and you have to do, you know, what fuels you throughout the day, what makes you feel good. You have to take care of yourself on the weekends. And, you know, because we don't get that much downtime on the weekends. I know sometimes there's always press to do, especially if you're in LA or New York. And so, I mean, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because for me, for a long time, I didn't practice a ton of like internal self-care. Like I took care of like, okay, the fridge is stocked, there's water, great. But you know, There's a lot of other stuff. There's a lot of mental preparation that goes into spending that much time in a hotel by yourself as well.
Yeah, yeah, no, there is. There is. And you have to do whatever it is to create and live in a certain sense of normalcy. You have to try and do what you can in routine, I guess, and keep as much as you can so it doesn't feel so far away from where you need to be, which is right here, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't know, going for a walk or, you know, just getting outside. You know, if you're in a new area too, it's nice to go out and do a little bit of the touristy thing, or just to appreciate the area that you are in to some degree, like you would do if you're at home, you know, going for a walk, seeing a waterfall, whatever it is that fills you up. Just going to trying to catch as much of that as you can is important, and not forgetting about that and thinking you're just there for the work, you know. No, you're there for you. And the work is something because of you.
Very true. True words, sir.
I tell you what. Just going back to that feeling that we have, and that thing that just kind of just gives us butterflies and we pinch ourselves. I want to be clear that those feelings don't only come, and they can't only come from when you're on the big studio ones, right? They can't, because you would die a very painful death if you were waiting for those moments. It's important to find those moments in our journey, in every single step, in the building block step, where we're learning. You know, when we go up and we put ourselves in front of a class and we do a presentation for the first time, that's a massive hurdle. The very, very first time you're on set, that's a massive hurdle. You've got these little mind things in your head saying, why am I doing this? What am I doing? Do I really need this? Is this the right thing? And you jump that hurdle and you go back again, and that's another hurdle just for going back. Yeah. It's important not to get swept up in the accomplishments of, or the so-called thought of accomplishment. You know, it's something that can be dangerous.
Yeah, it's not everything, you know. It's a home run, you know. It's not just hitting it out of the park once, yeah, and we're just going to run the bases. Sometimes the things most worth having and experiences are things that maybe you have to go through a couple of times, or figure out, yeah, or pull apart and figure out what's wrong, or, yeah, and then figure out what's worth, or putting it back together and then adding new things, and, or just cultivating it to its best potential and then, yeah, moving forward.
Yeah. Always look after yourself. Even when you're falling flat on your face, there's an element of a realization that you've taken that into account now. You know that you've fallen. If you look at it closer, you can figure out how you fell, how you landed, and then how to get back up again. You know, those are accomplishments in themselves. You know, falling flat on your face and just learning from it, that's massive. Whenever you fall flat, it's such a big, valuable, important lesson, and such a big stripe that you're going to get. I think one of my things that I've been working on too, as far as just getting enjoyment, is learning to enjoy the audition process. That's so hard. It's been so hard for me. And yeah, I'm still working on it. Is you know, sometimes they come in, I'm like, oh gosh, it's 6 pages, and I've got another one that's come in too, and that's 4 pages. What? Oh, and then I get bogged down with it, and I just, you know, it's really such a skill. It's an art. In if you can somehow separate yourself from those feelings and try and look towards the joy and the creative elements of it. There's so many things to be proud of when you're talking about the journey, and it just doesn't all come from being on set. You know, there's so many moments that you get. I mean, having a great conversation with the director, you know, on an indie short, yeah, that you're playing a good role in, and just having a little bit of input into that character with him and him listening to you and taking it all in. Those are great conversations. Those, you know, maybe nobody will see that short slight of day, but the fact you're able to form cohesive thoughts as a character and give it to the director, and he's able to work with you in that team as it should be. Those moments are all to be celebrated. I think there's a lot of celebrations. That's one thing to try and find is things to celebrate in this craft, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many things, you know, just stepping up and saying, I want to act is something to be celebrated in itself to be, because I think it's one of those things where when you tell somebody, you know, that you decide in the beginning, hey, I'm going to act. And it's either, you know, with my parents, they understood because I've been singing since I'm three. So they just have not heard me stop singing for the past 30 years. So they were just like, they knew that it was inevitable that I was going to be in the arts in some magnitude. But I mean, yeah, when you have that passion but when you do say to somebody for the first time, I'm going to act, you either get that look of like, oh my God, that's amazing. Like my parents were like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Or you get that, oh. Yeah. Like the three O's, it's the, oh, do I tell my friend this is a very bad idea? Oh shit, my friends possibly lost their mind. And oh boy, I have to go on this journey with them. That's really the three O's, I feel. All right.
That's an empowering moment.
Yeah.
Right? That's empowering. You're empowering yourself and training to empower yourself in mind is so valuable.
I think it takes, you know, I think as much fear as I have sometimes when it comes to putting, you know, work together, or like you were saying, when the auditions come in, I get very overwhelmed and I'm like, oh, I have so much to prepare. And I feel like I'm running around like a chicken with my head cut off. But then at the end of the day, I just go, I feel so lucky to be in this business and it just feels right. And sometimes I'm a person that very much goes on gut feelings. When things feel right, I go with them. I think that might also be the actor in me. Do you agree with that? Because I feel like, you know, I don't know if you're a person who goes on gut feelings, but when I go on my gut feelings, my friends are like, okay, they're just crossing their fingers. Like, I can't believe she's going on these feelings. But, you know, I think that as an actor, you kind of have to have a little bit of fearlessness and or be just willing to let go a little bit.
Yeah, you have to
be unknown.
Yeah, you have to. You can't pre-plan any of that. I think definitely you the more you're in the industry, the more the gut feelings become calculated. You know, you've gone through some learning curves there, I would imagine. At first, they start out as gut feelings that you don't act on, you know, but the longer you're around, the more you start to be propelled in either direction by those gut feelings, you know. It's important to recognize them for sure, for what they are, you know, and sometimes they are maybe unfounded, but a lot of the times, I think anytime a gut feeling comes up, there's valid reason, you know. And sometimes you can step away now. I think I've stepped away from a number of things. And again, that's just another empowering decision you've made by living through the fear, so to speak, you know, jumping. And
yeah. I feel, you know, it's interesting. You say jumping, you have to really just jump into this business. It's somebody, I had an actor friend say to me one time, they said, if I get one more DM of somebody asking me how to become an actor and they said, you just have to he said, finally, I wrote back to them and said, you just got to jump to LA or move to New York. He goes, and I told him, like, that's how you have to do it. And it's true. you have to jump in. Like, it's, you can't, it's when you feel something so deeply. I knew at a very young age that I had to perform. I had, in some way, I had to get it out almost, you know?
Yeah. So, I don't know what I would do now if I didn't have this. I don't know what I'd do. You know, it's not the be all and end all for me, but it gives me so much joy and fulfillment.
Right.
If I were to take that away, I would need to fill it with something else, and I just don't know what that would be. You know, yeah. I don't know. I love it. I love learning. I love learning because it is ultimately learning about yourself. You know.
Yeah.
Who you are, how you act in certain situations in front of whoever it is that you're in front of, and then craft aside how you are in front of crew and things like that, and learning yourself in those moments, you know, learning yourself in the hotel room. How are you going to act if you're sitting in a hotel room for a couple of weeks on end? And, you know, there's so much to be said about just going through the paces of it all, and just so much to learn along the way. Peppered. That's one thing that keeps me tuned in with it all is the fact that I don't think you ever stop learning. I don't think you could possibly ever stop learning about every different avenue of it, the business side, the technical, the craft element, the personal stuff that you bring set, whatever it is, it's there's always something there that can change, and can change you and other people and situations and scenarios.
It's incredible. And there's also so many different people from, like, on set, so many different people from so many different backgrounds, all experts in their own little areas, in their own little niches, and they all come together. And I have learned so much about production. And I was just talking the other day to somebody that I'm going to be working with on a future project. And I said to him, I said, do you remember when they used to film on film? I said, what are we using to film this movie? And we started talking about, you know, all these different things. And for a second, I was a little proud of myself that I knew. I said, I may have not gone to college, but I did go to the University of Hairspray. And that is a crash course in the business. And when you learn these things along the way, I found myself where I felt maybe a little subpar in conversations with people that have gone to these big Ivy League schools, and I've just acted since I'm 17. And then I remind myself, well, you have learned something, and they have no idea what check the gate means or martini shot means. Yeah. They have no idea. They have no clue who craft service is. They have no idea. So, you know, take everything for what you will with a grain of salt. But, you know, we all have our own journeys and own paths. Yeah. And that's really what I've been learning in my 30s.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome.
And now you have a daughter. Would you ever let her get into the business?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, if that's something she wanted to, I'm going to try and not let her not do anything, if that makes sense. You know, I wanted to do everything. I wanted to do everything and feel everything and just see what she wants to do. You know, I wouldn't stop her from doing anything that isn't going to hurt her. And you know, I think I can probably prepare her for certain things in the industry if it's something that she wanted to get into. That would give her a step up. I would help her if she wanted help. You know, she's so outgoing. She's amazing. She's a little caricature almost. She's a mess. She's an absolute mess. She's bonkers. And I think she would be well suited for that kind of expressionism, you know?
Yeah.
But That's something I think I would never, I'm not like a stage dad. I wouldn't want to kind of push her to that or say that. It's got to be from her. You know, the only thing that I'm going to make her do is sit down and eat.
Right.
And go to bed at normal time. That's just about it, you know.
That's beautiful. I think when you I'm not a parent, but I have a goddaughter, but I don't even pretend to know what being a parent is like. And to be a parent also in today's world, I just want to say that I give you all the utmost credit and respect, because that is a whole other feat in itself. Like, being a parent in the 90s, like now, props to all of you. But I think to like not put those boundaries around and let her experience things, I think that's really beautiful and really giving of you and selfless, because, you know, I may be turning 32 in, what is it, 7 days now, but my parents are still two of my best friends, and they very much raised me with that. If she's going to experience something, she's going to experience it, but we're going to be there for her. And recently, that kind of same thing happened that used to happen as a kid, where I found myself in a situation where I was crying, and my parents knew that I was going to get into the situation. But when I was there, they were there for me.
No.
And I think that is one of the most beautiful things. So as a 32-year-old woman who still looks up to her dad, I know your daughter is going to feel the exact same thing.
Oh, she's great. And I'm you know, her mother, my wife, is just amazing in every way with looking after what she does. She's a stay-at-home mom, and she's able to, you know, I think we've decided right before this happened that we're going to homeschool. So there's a lot that goes into it. You know, we both made a decision that no devices, no television until she was about six. You know, we didn't want to introduce her to that kind of blankness that comes from just sitting down watching TV or getting on one of those things, you know.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of work. I obviously have been coming to and from the house between work and what have you, and I'm so grateful that my wife has been able to implement the strategy that has ultimately paid off already in how Ylva converses with us and how connected she is to other people, to the outside world, to going for a walk, to picking up leaves and picking up stones and finding beauty in those things, you know, rather than just plugged in all the time. And it's, I appreciate you giving credit, but it's not all, definitely not all me. My wife is, she's amazing.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Moms, I'm not a mom, but my mom's pretty awesome. And yeah, I mean, it takes something special to let somebody engage with life. You know what I mean? You're teaching her to engage and pick up the pretty leaves and go for walks and experience things. And I think that's absolutely gorgeous. And I wish that, you know, everybody would kind of.
It has to be a conscious decision. Almost conscious decision to be unconscious of it.
Yeah.
But just play it into your everyday.
Because I feel like it's so much easier for parents to hand their kids an iPad and go, here you go, and then walk away. You know, you're actually sitting there and spending the time. And so that's a relationship that you're cultivating and building with her. And that's a bond that'll never be broken.
Yeah, I hope not. We used to sit down and watch TV on with our dinners, and then when the little one came along, we just sit there eating our dinner, looking at her.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's crazy. I'm learning my way, and we're learning our way as far as parenting goes. And you know, it's mostly all good. I don't know a lot of people, and I get it, because I probably was the same way. It's like some people I know at work. I've had a conversation with a friend, and it's like, I just don't know if I'm ready. It's like, if you're thinking about it like that, you won't, I don't know that you will ever be ready, but you always will be, and you just don't know it. You always will. If it's, you know, it's not as easy as everybody says, as far as having children. Those, we went through loss first, before we got to our daughter, now that we're able to hold every day. And it's not as easy. Actually, just making a decision to be a parent isn't just all straightforward. We're such a miracle to be here, you know, and until you become a percentage, you don't realize how much of a miracle it is, you know, and how much of a gift it is to even go through being pregnant.
Yeah. I mean, you're so incredibly enlightened, Mark Ashworth. You are. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
And where, I mean, what's coming up for you next? What projects are on the horizon?
I'm hoping I'm coming back for Stargirl season 2 at some point. I was on that last year. I was so grateful to be on that. I was on, I think I had like eight or nine episodes by the end of the year. And they didn't die. So I'm hoping that I'll get to come back a little bit. Aside from that, now auditions are just trickling in. I've got that pilot that we're currently in post-production on, hoping that will get picked up, because that would be a great run. And that's kind of set in pandemic era. I'm a postal service, is going postal, and postal service worker. It's really cool. And yeah, so we're going to work on that, and then just audition and just work. I'm hopeful to get out of the restaurant as much as possible there and get back on set.
Yes. Well, I wish the same for you, and I wish you all the best. And I just thank you so much for sharing your stories with me and taking this time.
Of course. Has it been an hour already, Nikki?
Oh, yeah, pretty much. Almost.
Wow, I've been. Blah, 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 blah.
No, it's been beautiful. I love talking to other actors and hearing everybody's different experiences, because that's the thing. It's like, we all have so many different experiences with the craft and different approaches, different everything. But sometimes, just like you and I today, we definitely synced up. We just, knowing that you feel that feeling, I feel that feeling. And there are other actors out there that know exactly what we're talking about. And for anybody who's not an actor, it's just a feeling of just sheer joy. So apply it to whatever it is in your life that brings you the most happiness.
Do what makes your heart sing.
Always.
Yes. Nikki, it's been a pleasure. Give us a hug.
Oh, my gosh. I adore you. You're the cutest.
Be well. I love you. Take care, Nikki.
Bye. Oh my gosh, he's adorable. That's the first time I've virtually hugged somebody through the camera. I adore you, Mark Ashworth. Thank you so much for your stories and your time and telling us about your journey and the path that you're on. Mark just touched on so many subjects that are just applied to so many areas of my life right now, from acting to everything. But he's right. When you feel something and you know and you feel it in your heart, you have to go with it. This is a wild time that we're all living in. It's a scary time. But I leave you with this all the time. Just treat each other with kindness. Treat people the way you want to be treated. And just take care of each other. You know, also this month is a month that I lost my uncle to suicide. So I encourage you all to pick up the phone and check on your loved ones and just see how they're doing. It takes nothing to send a text message. Say, hey, Aunt Susie, whatever, just seeing how you are. Just be the type of person that you would want to be surrounded by. I always go back to the wise words of my grandma, but as I get older, they become more prevalent. So I adore you all. I'm sending you so much love, and be well. Bye.